Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona Tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome. My name is Jordan, Jordan Rich, that is, and this is the podcast with my name in it, On Mic with Jordan Rich. We celebrate conversation with creative people who have a lot to say and a lot to give. And there are times in life when you meet up with somebody, either in a business setting or socially, and things just click. Person gets you, you get that person. That is truly the case with today's guest. His name is David Lebovsky, a creative technologist, former agency owner, who's on a mission to help people find and nurture happiness at work. The stats unfortunately indicate that a great number of us are unhappy at the workplace. And when you consider the amount of time in your life you spend working, well, that's just not something David Lebovsky wants to put up with. So he's written the primer on it all, and a great book at that, called The Search for Work Happiness, Helping Leaders Keep Themselves and Their People Happy and Mentally Healthy. Thrilled to welcome this young Southern gentleman with a beautiful accent to join us to talk about it. So David Lebovsky, welcome. Step right up and join us on mic. Well, to say that I love this book is an understatement, and one of the reasons I love it is because I feel I know it page by page, word by word. David Lebovsky actually came to my studio and we did the audiobook together. You recorded it. Great to hear it right from the author's mouth.
Yeah, no, thanks for having me. You and Ken made it super easy to do something I really haven't done a lot of before, which is sit in front of a microphone. And for anybody, hearing your own voice is usually pretty dreadful. So I wasn't sure what to expect of the experience, and y'all made it super great. And the quality at the end is just, it's not actually hard to listen to myself.
Well, I want to start with your voice. And this is a part of parcel of what you're doing here is the way you present yourself. And you're just one individual, David Lebovsky, but you've written The Search for Work Happiness. And your voice, I've been told my voice is kind of soothing, sometimes scary, but soothing often. Your voice just bespeaks the gentleman of the South, the kindness and all that.
I appreciate that.
And I don't know about us Northerners being quick and crisp and very abrupt, but I do know about Southerners and friends of mine like you. You just have a way of making everything seem very relaxed. So thank you for that.
Oh, man. Well, thank you for that. I'm sure it stems from, I had a very, very calm mother who I feel I probably did some really bad things as a child and never got a raised voice from her. And so I think it's kind of set that tone for me early on to, you don't have to raise your voice to get things done, you know.
The book's subtitle is Helping Leaders Keep Themselves and Their People Happy and Mentally Healthy. And that's important, to put the oxygen mask on yourself so you can help others. I want to have you talk, David, with us before we get into some of the precepts and concepts that are so beautifully simple but ornate in their own right. Let's talk a little bit about you. And you mentioned your mom, and she's a big influence. Also your older brother, right?
Older brother, yeah.
Tell us about him.
Oh, man. So I won't get into the details of why, but he was pretty much like co-raising me with my mother. And I mean, I talk about this in the book, but he had this really unique understanding at a young age of how to do some of the like core important things a father would, like getting your kid to like stick up for themselves, but not think they have to do it all the time, being a protecting force for me. So I feel like he at 13, 14, 15 years old was like showing all these insane leadership qualities that he obviously was not being taught or reading in books or anything. Mm. And, you know, now he's just last month, I believe, finished his 20th year in the military, staff sergeant. So it's really unique just to see like the care and precision that he sort of innately had at home to teach what was necessary for me to grow up to be a man, but then be able to get in front of a bunch of strangers and take even a stronger stance and really lead people in a kind of a crazier way, I believe.
I've never met a leader I respect who hasn't had mentor or mentorship in his or her life. you got to have somebody that can lead you along. That's the human experience. And I love the stories about your brother, especially the fact that he's given back so much as you have in his service to this country.
That was so unique about him is I don't really know who his mentor was. It was just some people are just born with it in whatever their area is. And he just had this leadership it that somehow he just found early. It was very unique.
Work happiness. Let's take a look at the word happiness. It suggests that you want to have a smile occasionally on your face. You want to laugh a little bit. And the book is a lot of fun. You're a very low-key guy in terms of your presentation, very relaxed. But you got a pretty fine sense of humor. So let's start with that. I mean, so much of this kind of philosophy that has worked so well for you, David, has to do with going against the grain, being transparent in the real sense, and injecting humor. So let's have you sort of lay out some of the philosophy here.
So it ultimately stems in not a bad way, but you can get away with more if you're kind about it. So if you're pushing against the grain a little, but you're being polite about it, being kind, and you're really trying to have good intent, I feel those things go a long way. So I feel like kindness sort of laid the groundwork for me to talk about some really bad issues I was seeing in the industry, just overall human treatment from the amount of hours people were being expected to work to just sort of like the hampering down of junior talent and really just the elevation of a few important people to just not trusting employees. Like, they call out sick and defaulting to being suspicious of what they're up to and instead of like sending them something nice. So I was really just trying to find a lot of ways to fix the things around me that I just felt weren't really good for people's mental health or well-being.
Lots of step-by-step suggestions, kind suggestions, but I'll just quote from a couple of pages here and there and have you comment. Here's one. Opportunities for growth are more important than putting on a show for a client. And opportunities for voices to be heard shouldn't be determined by seniority. Oh, from your mouth to God's ears. But that's so true, isn't it, David?
Man, it was amazing how in every company, good people, not just like quote-unquote bad leaders, but there's this expectation that when you get in front of the client, it's got to be your best people. Everything's got to be super polished, regardless of who put in the work to get there in the first place. So early on, I had the pleasure of working around someone, not directly under them, who was really big about if someone at a lower level, a junior, a mid-level person, created something nice that we were going to show the client, to let them and not, I think I say it in their quote of his, we're not selling presentations, we're selling good work. And how do people become refined presenters if you don't let them work out the kinks? So that's kind of the foundation behind that is just taking some of that voice, not all of it, but some of it from the top level and just sharing it amongst the lowers.
It seems so logical at its core that you wonder why it isn't more adopted across the board. You want people to want to work for you and with you. That's the whole goal. You want to have, if you've got a baseball team, you don't want to have everybody playing for themselves. You want them playing for the team and looking up to you enough so that they'll do it in a prideful way. Why is that so difficult for so many organizations to figure out?
My assumption is it's easy in the moment. You're trying to be as efficient as possible. You're trying to get through as few reviews with the client as possible. You're trying to have as great of a reputation and polishes of a reputation as possible. So I think it's just the easy default to that instead of having some tough conversations with the client behind the scenes. If they're upset, things aren't super buttoned up or established. I think it's really just the ease of trust your senior people. You know they're going to knock it out of the park and sort of move forward, but it's not very forward looking because when those senior people move on, you haven't really refined the group under them.
You quote a Gallup poll in one of the pages here. I'll just lift a few points and have you comment. They conducted one of the largest studies regarding employee frustration. This was back in just a year ago. And here are the five largest drivers, and I want you to just sort of summarize in your own way what this all means. Unfair treatment at work, unimaginable workload, unclear communication from managers, lack of manager support, and unreasonable time-based expectation. We kind of touched on a few of those, but the first one, unfair treatment at work. Well, how do you declare what's unfair? How do you figure that out?
It really is. There's a level of judgment there, but I think if your people appear beat down, if your people there 6 hours after their work shift, I feel like there's some clear, obvious ones there. But I think you just have to work that out with a shift. So, for example, if an 8 hour shift, I think we could probably agree 11, 12, 13 hours of working isn't really sustainable in the long run. And I would say that's unfair treatment at work. So I understand as employers, we have to make sure our people are working enough, but no one's really paying attention to when people work too much. And so I think that's where the unfair treatment stems from. There's lots of smaller ones like the not giving juniors a voice like we just talked to, but the overall premise of that one is, and I believe this is in the new business pitching section, but the people are working 8 hour shifts and then working another 8 hour shift to work on trying to help the company get new work in. And you've got people working 15, 16 hour days. It's just, I'm not going to get too crazy with the language, but it's just like a bit much, man. And no one's really saying anything about it because you want to earn your stripes and you want to like really impress people, but the well-being just starts getting shaved off at a quick rate.
That's a great point. It's well-being. When somebody feels well and is energized, has enough rest, they're going to perform better. I watched a show just last night, and coincidentally, I don't know if you've heard of it, it's called The Consultant, and it's a brand new sort of dramedy horror kind of thing where this gaming company, and you're in the computer world a lot, this gaming company has an issue, and in comes this bizarre guy. He's a consultant, and things happen in a weird way because it's TV. But the first thing he does is he announces that everyone who's been working at home has 1 hour to get into the office or they're fired. And a woman approaches the door, the front door, in a wheelchair just as the clock hits the top of the hour, and he refuses to let her in. I mean, it's obviously a satire, but it is true that a lot of people don't take the kind approach, and they're not giving in. And when they're not giving in, everybody feels frustrated, not just the person who's left out.
Oh, people, not everywhere, but the large amount of cases, people are just hours on like a timesheet. So the context of where they are mentally, or in the case you're talking about, what's going on with them physically, like those things are very blinded out, I think. And I get that at like the upper level of large corporations, but the managers at the lower level, which is what this book is about,
right?
That's the level that really has to take more of an eye to my person's got a slight handicap and took a 2 hour transit to work. Maybe I should pay attention and adjust and evolve to that a little more. So it's just being a good human. Again, like you said earlier, I don't understand sometimes why this stuff isn't more frequent and just kind of a duh thing, but it just unfortunately isn't.
In The Search for Work Happiness, the book we're talking about with my friend David Lebofsky, you talk about when to stand up for your team and when to back off.
Yeah, so again, this is probably something I've learned very strongly from my brother, but you know, there's times and to fight battles with clients, if they ask you to do something out of nowhere that's going to cause your team to work the weekend, you can stand your ground because you promised everyone that they were never going to work weekends. But if the client's doing that often, well, you can't every single time say no. So you definitely have to find balances. Sometimes work isn't great and everybody's got to sort of band together. And then sometimes there's this sort of, you got to back off and let especially the management level under you sort of figure out the problem with the client on their own instead of flying in. And you know, very often the partner level or the high management level has relationships with these clients. So it's really easy for us to come in and diffuse a situation. Sometimes you just really have to let people sort of learn to diffuse on their own and let them learn to develop relationships with the clients on their own. So it's a tricky balance. I personally struggle with it really, really hard, Jordan. I want everyone to have a great day at work. I want to stick up for everybody. That's not my right, really. Like some people want to stand up for themselves and learn on their own. So you really have to find a delicate balance there.
So, David, one of the things that stands out for me, and this is something I've never noticed in any other business presentation or book of this kind, is your attention not only to employees, obviously, and middle management and how things work inside, but how things work outside with clients and, more importantly, even with vendors. And this is an approach that some business people might not find comfortable, but you're all about taking care of the vendors. And I'll tell you, man, you take care of the vendors, they'll take care of you. Please jump in when you'd like and talk about this.
Man. Like I was part of the big engine. I was part of the problem that would really treat the external help, the freelancers, the contractors, really wouldn't try to get them paid fast, or really wouldn't include them in like company meetings all the time or communications all the time. So they're really just treated like these outcasts that are secondary to really get taken care of. So payment, net 60, net 90. We just heard in the news a little Keurig Dr. Pepper has like a net year basically, where they're making people wait a year for payment. When these people are, for the most part, like really hustling and trying to get by. So credit my business partner at my last agency, David, but we set out to do the opposite and see how people reacted. So we decided to pay vendors immediately. They send us an invoice and we pay them immediately. And sometimes a few days might go by, but that was the goal. Immediately send payment and see how they feel. Every vendor, every partner, every freelancer would just write us these nice, amazing emails on how they're usually not treated like that. And it's funny, more people don't do it because those people are so quick to jump in if we need something, even if they don't have a lot of time. So you make people feel like humans, and they want to work for you again. It's pretty simple.
Good begets good. Absolutely. That good feeling, that camaraderie. Chapter 7, I want to also point out an interesting facet. The title of the chapter is, and again, this is something that I'm being very honest with you because I've interviewed so many people on the subject of work and employment place. Never seen this. Promote talented employees without forcing them into leadership. And let me quote you, don't blur the lines between legendary talent and legendary leadership. Love your comment on that.
Jordan, it's amazing how we think that the path for everyone to the top for them is the same. So you've got some people who are born leaders, and that's the path they're going to follow. They're going to get handed a junior person to manage, and then a few more people, and then there's supervisors, and then directors, and then they run companies, and that is a path. But there's amazing artists who shouldn't be trusted with a pet, shouldn't be trusted with a human. But really, to advance in your career, at least in a lot of corporate America, you have to do both. It's not just here's good project, help us and grow. It's here's a human. Here's someone's life, help mold them and grow. And it's quite blind of us as businesses to just assume that everyone can get, put in this thing that just forms them into a manager, forms them into a good leader. So I really believe in just finding amazing talent and put them in a position to succeed, whether it's management or not, and then compensate them for that and allow them to grow in their career without leadership. If that, not everybody's built for that. It's crazy to think that they are.
Very perceptive. I love that philosophy. Now, we talked about humor, and rather than us just talk about it, can you give an example from the book as to how you or people you worked with did things a little out of the box, shall we say, a little off the grid, that made people smile, that broke the stress level? Just one example.
So I would say overall, it is, we talk about the don't distrust people. We had a philosophy that anytime somebody was sick, we would immediately write them something very nice, or send them something really nice, like a spoonfuls of comfort was something we used to do a lot. It's basically soup in a blanket. So I feel like that's probably like the immediate example that comes to my mind, Jordan, is just the glowing nature of people when you do something like that. Because you're not just doing something nice, you're showing them that all their preconceived notions that most employees have that or do people really think I'm sick? Does my team think I'm not dependable? You're like curing all of those at the same time you're doing something nice because it's like no one here is thinking the wrong thing. Please get better. Like people feel like crap during a time like that. It's like super crazy that we're almost always finding a way to spin that as society into are they gladiatorial enough? Are they
Yeah.
dependable? Are they really sick? So that's probably the
I didn't mean by my question, I should have been a little clearer. I didn't mean, putting on a clown nose and making them laugh, a la Robin Williams. What I was thinking, though, was in looking at the book, and I complimented you on this, you've got some very creative people in your life sphere, and a lot of them are doing illustration work that is off the charts, Gary Larson-ish. If people know who that is, and that brings a smile on many of the pages in the book, so it doesn't have to be knocked down, fall out of your chair laugh. But it made me smile. Just the cover itself. You want to describe the cover you have on this book?
No, I appreciate that. So basically there were 12 to 14 different concepts, like overwork, that I thought would be really nice if they were illustrated, but in a way that's just sort of funny. So, for example, like the overwork one, just have people sleeping at their desks or walking around in pajamas. But the thought was to create all these scenes in a manner where they could be combined to show just the day in the life of an employee. So, you pick up the book. Work happiness is not just about what happens in those offices at the top. It's what happens at home on the way to work. It's what happens during transit or when you stop at the market. So, just trying to show all these different scenes that a person goes through in their work day and all the different ways sort of weaved through illustrations that they can potentially be treated improperly. And then each of those associate with a chapter. So, definitely partnered with a guy named Aaron Yao, an amazing illustrator. And then a guy named Brian James, really a great book layout artist, to make sure we could individually capture all of these chapters in funny, disarming illustrations, but still combine them into like this overall picture.
I know the book is relatively fresh and new and just published. The audiobook is available or will be by the time this podcast hits. What's been the reaction of people who know you, and then what's been the reaction of people who don't? I mean, I'm just curious because I loved it. You walked in here and both my partner Ken and I said, "This is us, man. We love
Oh
to
man.
do work fun and pleasurable." But what has been the reaction, David?
Yeah, just so you know, the feelings were the same with you too. For the people I worked with, I think there was a lot of thank you, thank heaven somebody actually said this in a way that wasn't aggressive or condescending. I do feel from both strangers and people I know that the best feedback I got is it all comes across with good intent, because that was my concerns. There are some pretty serious topics in there that we're trying to hit head on with kindness and humor. So the fact that it seemed to have landed well is what's great. As you know, with any new book, for a lot of strangers to find it takes a little time and reviews and algorithms and stuff like that. So the but most of the feedback I've gotten so far from strangers who have somehow run across it is sort of the same. Like, really appreciate you tackling some of these things. I think I say this a lot in the book, but there's very few people everything in here is going to apply to. Unless you worked in a crazy ad agency, every single thing probably won't apply. But if a manager, a leader, a business owner, can take anything out of this to add to their management tool set. And if this book gets in the hand of like an HR decision maker and they start looking at their policies a little just to support well-being, if there's like little shifts like that from a few random people, to me, it's a glowing success and the point was achieved. And I think the feedback so far is it's headed in that direction. So fingers crossed.
You are a younger gentleman than I am, and we obviously know where you come from based on that beautiful accent. But you're also Mr. Cutting Edge. You've been in the ad agency creative part of the world of software and design and so forth, so much so that when you look at the book, folks, about the author, and this is not probably you alone, but this is happening now more and more, you provide a QR code. So people can scan that with their phones and instantly know all about you. At the same time, you are as old-fashioned as ice cream and apple pie. Mr. Cutting Edge, who hasn't lost the idea that values matter.
Oh yeah, you can't forget your roots. I definitely at a young age stumbled upon computers and the ability to achieve things that my hands were not capable of doing, the drawing and the animating and the bringing things to life. I had a love for that, but I could just never get it, Jordan. I couldn't draw stick man very well, so I definitely got into computers and some more modern tech and software, and that definitely is that's kind of what drives me on a visual and creation level. But I still just look around me, and if I don't see people treated well, it sort of comes to the forefront of my mind. And so ultimately, in everything I'm doing work-wise, I'm trying to find ways to infuse, whether it's making someone smile by just like a little piece of animation, or it's actually a project like the book that is actually for good. I'm trying to weave the two as best as possible. But yeah, I definitely have some old fashioned in me.
And it's okay here, and I think a lot of our listeners from around the world can identify with that, and we're thrilled, and we just hope that this book and all the work you're doing as a human being just continues to take off. We're so proud of you and for you, and I'm going to be a little old-fashioned. Tell everybody the website instead of just having them. You can't do a QR code on an audio podcast.
Thank you again for those kind comments, Jordan. You both have been pretty special. My name's David Lubofsky. It's DavidLubofsky.com. That is my personal website, and the book you can go to findworkhappiness.com. So appreciate anyone looking at the stuff that I do, and maybe finding some inspiration to do your part in the world. So thank you for the time here today, Jordan.
My pleasure, sir. I would recommend David Lubofsky's book to just about anybody in the workplace. It's called The Search for Work Happiness, helping leaders keep themselves and their people happy and mentally healthy. At the end of the day, that's about as important as it gets. It's also important for me to thank you, the listeners, for being so nice and subscribing and downloading this podcast. The ratings and reviews are fantastic. We appreciate those. And you can find out more and connect with me through my website, jordanrich.com, jordanrich.com. Till next time, this is JR reminding you to be well so you can do good. Take care.
Mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.